Welcome to the Citation Podcast. I'm Mick Feather, and today we're diving into a subject that's at the very heart of delivering safe, quality care, health and safety. It's an area that's always evolving, and for providers, the challenge is balancing regulatory expectations with the operational reality of running a busy service. I'm delighted to be joined by two brilliant guests. First, we have Martin Andrews, health and safety consultant, with extensive experience across the care sector. And joining us too is Nadra Ahmed, Executive Chair of the National Care Association and one of the strongest voices for care providers in the UK. So let's get started by setting the scene. When we talk about health and safety in care right now, the biggest challenges that come up time and again are infection control, fire safety, and lone working. These are the pressure points that providers tell us keep them up at night. So, Martin, from your perspective, what do you see as the single biggest health and safety challenge in the current care landscape?
I think, if I'm being honest, Mick, the way things are and the way things are changing within the care sector, it's staying up to date with the changes that are taking place within regards to health and safety. Health and safety is such a wide and such a broad area, and care providers are doing a remarkable job in terms of managing and delivering services for people, but staying up to date with a subject that is so wide ranging and covers so many different areas is a fundamental challenge for them. So whether it's, as you've mentioned, areas such as infection control, other areas, you know, there's so many different aspects to take into account, really, and understand it from all perspectives. I think it really is a big challenge for care providers, but applying it in a practical way, really.
Yeah, no, I think what's really important to stress here is that it is really important. Of course it is, and it's in so many different areas, mm-hmm. as you've just said. The one thing is the kind of balancing act that a provider has to play, because we are asked to promote independence as much as possible, but then we also have to do this health and safety piece and look at the risk assessments and everything else that goes with it. So balancing the two is quite a challenge. So I think you would agree with me that in many ways, these are dynamic pieces of work. So it's not just that you've done one and weeks later or months later or years later, you might think about it. But as things change in an environment, if you bring a new sofa in, a new resident comes in with different, you know, all of those sorts of things, is that sort of pretty much it's a dynamic.
You're absolutely right, Nadra. It is a constant changing face. You know, whether we're talking about residential care, domiciliary care, supported living, we're talking about working with individuals whose needs will change, adapt and grow and develop depending on the type of service. So it's essential that risks are managed in a dynamic way, but also that we're achieving balance and proportionality across those. So far too often, sometimes, do we see, you know, controls being too robust that may be slightly restrictive, whereas it is about involving people and thinking about how we can apply controls in a proportionate way that still manage risks for both staff and people being supported, but also enable those outcomes to be achieved and people to really have the service that they need.
I think the staff bit is so key to it, keeping them up to date with training and education as well.
And it's a real balance. So I remember as an inspector, and this is obviously another factor to, you know, and it follows on in terms of what you're talking about there, Martin, about balance, because as an inspector, when I was inspecting, you know, some learning disability services, there's the positive risk element. Yeah. So there's the making sure that it's not restrictive, that you're not stopping individuals to live the life that they want to do. So with one of the tensions that we hear from providers being managing risk effectively without drowning frontline staff in endless checklists and paperwork, Martin, what do you see providers, how do they strike a balance in practice in terms of what they do?
I think the key to really striking a balance, if I'm honest, Mick, is involving people. really involving people in that identification of risk and what's important to people and how hazards can be controlled. You're absolutely right. Far often we get caught up in the need for risk checklists and other documentation to demonstrate what we're doing. But whilst that's essential, it's making sure, again, that that's proportionate. There was an example recently where I was doing a health and safety inspection at a care home, and started looking at checklists for areas such as environmental checklists for making sure bathrooms and that were appropriate, but seeing items on checklists that weren't relevant to the setting, and yet it still got a tick in a box.
Yeah.
And so I think really stopping and thinking about what are the hazards, what can really affect people, both people being supported within services, but also the staff teams and other people that may access or come into contact with those services, such as visitors, family members and so forth, that are all adequately important to consider, but really thinking about what makes paperwork good. And these days, embracing digital means, a lot of providers are using electronic care planning systems that allow for checklists with citation. Obviously, we have the Atlas platform and that as well, that enables people to embrace and actually capture things in real time in a live way that engages it as part of essential record keeping, that demonstrates a safe service. So when CQC come knocking on the door, but also helps demonstrate that journey for people, and that's done in a safe way, really.
Nod, what do you think the regulators really want to see here? Do you think it's about evidence, or do you think it's about outcomes for people, or do you think it's a bit of both? Or
so I'd like to say it's outcomes, but what I'm going to say is it's paperwork. The CQC are very much more interested in that audit trail. For good reasons, and I suspect our insurers would say the same sort of thing. They want to see the paperwork that we've done stuff. I think for me, we should be concentrating a lot more on the outcomes. We should be looking at the impact it has on an individual. So individual bedrooms, for example, they'll all be different. Mm-hmm. Some people will be able to manage the risk of, you know, having a bedside table. Others may not be able to manage that risk. And how do we make sure that it's all very person-centered? And I think for CQC, for example, when they do come around, I think they need to be much more confident in themselves about what health and safety means, because I think that sometimes is a bit risk of the people coming in don't have the same sort of amazing knowledge that you have, because how can they then test it with the staff, the workforce, to make sure the workforce is safe? If you've got somebody with delirium, how are we managing that risk for that individual, which means also for the member of staff, not only the environment?
And I think it's trying to get that balance, isn't it? And I do think a lot of the time, and you've just mentioned it, Martin, about, because there's so much paperwork for providers to try and, but I always think, don't be doing things like risk assessments for people that don't need a risk assessment.
No.
Or don't add things into it, because it's got to be personal, isn't it?
It is.
It's about risk to you, not about this is my standard form. So if there's something on here, this needs completing, because that's not person-centered. That's just having a risk assessment for the sake of having them.
Exactly. For me, I think it's about making sure that if we're talking about person-centered risk assessment, it's also capturing and evidencing the importance of, well, if this activity or this choice doesn't go ahead, what will be the impact of the person? And that doesn't just impact that person. That also directly impacts their family, but it'll also impact the staff team that have been supporting that person perhaps for many, many years, and not getting to see that person live and achieve a fulfilled life in a way that's relative to them. I think it's got to be that we're managing it in a proportionate way that's right for the service.
And I think I do remember, just going back to the inspection that I did, I remember like one of the individuals, one of the guys who had a learning disability, he was in his 20s. What he wanted to do is he wanted to go skydiving. Now, of course, if you talk to people about someone with learning disabilities who's 23, going skydiving, family, everybody, don't want it to happen. No, never, too risky, don't want to do it. But if the individual, that's something that they want to do,
yeah,
it's like the risk is no different to that individual if if it's, you know, an accompanied parachute jump than it is for anybody else. So
yeah,
it's trying to get that balance, isn't it?
I think one of the things that I live with, and have done for all the years that I've been in social care, is that every one of us takes a risk. Those of us who drive, you take a risk when you get in the car. You risk assess your environment when you get into the car. You think about all those risks as you make a journey, and every journey is different. Every single day we make a different journey in a different way, because the obstacles in our way might be different. So I think from my perspective, I think every single day, every journey has to be risk assessed in a different way. We couldn't carry that paperwork every single day in our heads. So some of it has got to come from good training,
yep,
from good experience, and good management scheme.
I think, you know, we hear about stories such as skydiving and those kind of things. And that's a wonderful example of, you know, areas that people might have been restricted from because of concerns about risk. But you can apply the same thing to somebody living with dementia in the community that's receiving a care service, and people being worried about that person still living within the community and going out on their own, and will they get lost and how they cross a road. I think the importance of that is risk has got to be managed in a meaningful way. We've got to understand what's important to people and what's important in their lives and what risk means to them, in the context of the service being delivered, but also their lives. And keeping people active and central to that's yeah, care and support.
And having their life.
Yeah.
So something that I've always believed in is that incidents and near misses are powerful learning opportunities. But often the fear of scrutiny, I think, means providers don't always use them to drive positive change. This is a little bit like a interview question. So, Martin, what examples have you seen where services have turned a difficult situation into a real improvement?
There's probably a number of examples that I can draw from, if I'm being honest, Mick. Probably if I think about one of the most recent ones I've had involvement with and supported a care provider with, a service I was, a care provider that I'd done quite a bit of work with, really, quite recently. Again, it was in relation to managing risk and making sure that risk was managed in a meaningful way, but adequately controlled. And it resulted in, there was a situation that resulted in a fire within a care home, that then led to further sort of visits from not just CQC, but the fire service, the local authority and those kind of things. And that was really a challenging time for that provider. What came out of that really was the work that we was able to do and go in and work with that provider, not only in terms of fire risk assessment, but the other areas that we was able to then support with. So whether that was things like development of PEEPs and really considering how people could be supported to be as independent as possible in the event of an emergency, but supporting the implementation of those kind of areas. So again, when you've talked about things like documentation and it not being overwhelming, making sure that documentation is put into place is, again, proportionate, that does the job that it needs to, but that everything really is focused on those individuals within that service and how they're supported in an effective way, really.
So, Nora, how can we create a culture in care where, as Martin has just mentioned, sort of where learning is celebrated and not punished, which seems to sometimes be the way, doesn't it?
Well, I think every day we get an opportunity to learn something different and something new. And I think the one thing that I would say is if something is raised within the environment you work in, doesn't matter if it's positive or negative, make sure that you dissect it to the point where it becomes a learning curve. Celebrating good is easier, but celebrating learning sometimes becomes more difficult. So if you can turn a negative into a positive, it's a greater, and also making sure that the person who's raised it is actually applauded for it and is not penalized for it. Because all of these things matter. I think if anybody, in our office, for example, in the National Care Association office, we're on a first floor. And one day we were just having a conversation and one of the staff said, well, if there was a fire in this building, how would we get out if the corridor we were in was affected? That conversation went to the point where we ordered a ladder to get out the, but it was because a member of staff raised it. It wasn't something that a fire officer raised in our building. It wasn't anything, but a member of staff. So for us, that's a learning curve. For a care setting, every individual that comes into that organization as a member of staff has something that they have to contribute. They're not there just doing what you're telling them to do. They will have something to contribute. And I think it's celebrating that's important and learning, but also cascading, because learning doesn't belong with one person. Yeah. You've got to cascade it.
I think sometimes that, as I say, applying that from an organisational context, so sharing information. But I think you're right, it's empowering people to have that voice, isn't it? And celebrating when people raise things, whether that's seen as a good thing or whether it's an issue in particular. Because sometimes, as you say, Nadja, although it can be more difficult if it's not a positive thing, I think the powerful outcome of what can come from that,
yes,
if it's really looked at.
I say to people, you need to have a service improvement plan. So whether it's every 6 months or every year, you have a service improvement plan. And if you say to me, I haven't got a service improvement plan, you're literally telling me that you haven't improved anything. Yeah. Now, the regulator wants to see that continuous improvement. That's, that's part of the quality statements and the things that they want. How have you improved, whatever? So the easy thing, A4 sheet of paper, what's your improvements for next year?
Yeah.
Right, thank you both. Right. Next one. As an ex-CQC inspector, I know how quickly the focus of inspections can shift. Right now, what are CQC and HSE most concerned with in terms of health and safety in care? So, Martin, from your consultancy work, what themes are cropping up again and again?
I think work that I'm doing with providers at the moment, and when I'm speaking to both small and large providers, things that keep cropping up, and it perhaps hasn't changed over time, it's some of the fundamentals and the basics, really, if we talk about care and safe care and safe environments. So I'll go out to a care provider and they've recently had an inspection and they're talking about CQC inspectors pulling on wardrobes to make sure that they're secured so they won't fall on people and those kind of things. Through to even one more recently of a CQC inspector measuring the height of a handrail. If I'm being honest, it seems to, I don't know. But again, some of the fundamentals, and that comes down to the environment, to make sure the environment is safe and that, the service is really looking and staying on top of management of safety within the service, and that really the things that keep coming out.
Nadja, what are you hearing nationally from members about the things that care providers are most concerned with in terms of health and safety in care?
Well, interestingly enough, I've also heard about this wardrobe pulling. So it's obviously something that's happened quite a bit. But I think the health and safety piece in general has become quite big. But also the risk assessments, we're hearing a lot more about risk assessments and being live documents again, but a lot of audit trailing. The worry that I have is that the inspections are assuming not good rather than good. And it's a kind of a backward step in many ways. So there's an assumption that you're not delivering as based to you are delivering. So I think there's a mood music here. Mm-hmm. Health and safety is a key part of everything we do. Fire inspections, for example, we're getting fire inspectors we're being told that fire inspectors are insisting on hinges of doors being changed on a regular basis. All of this kind of stuff is becoming quite challenging because it's not just CQC when we look at the health and safety piece. It's a bigger piece than that. Generally speaking, if you've got a very robust health and safety mechanism in, which I'm sure a lot of providers you go into, that's what they're asking you for, then CQC do bypass it as well, which is also interesting because they know that you've gone to an external body and they're doing it. But all of it is not taking into account the wishes of the individual, which is that positive risk scenario that we were talking about earlier.
I think one thing that just ties in with something you said earlier again is that part of the confidence and competence of the inspector coming in around their knowledge around health and safety. So when you talk about things like hinges being changed on a more frequent basis and those kind of things, but also that will relate to other areas as well. I think it sometimes does come down to that competence and confidence. And I think one of the benefits of a provider having support from a company like Citation is that inspector then will see that there has been a competent person in providing support. There's an inspection report that's picked up and identified both issues that need addressing, but also hopefully that celebrates successes with that service where risks are being managed effectively as well.
Going back to your point, Nadra, I think it would be useful, and I have asked the CQC about when their guide for providers about what good looks like is actually going to be available, because they have come up with a single assessment framework, but haven't actually told providers what good looks like, which makes it very difficult, whether you're looking at health and safety or anything else or whatever. But okay, so I think we're very aware that certainly from a provider point of view and other potential local authorities, and it obviously happened during COVID as well, where there's like a focus, isn't there, on safety and well-led. So it's about safety and our managers aware of it. But I think, you know, both of you are exactly right in terms of, you know, it's not about measuring how high handrails are and testing. That's a really dangerous thing, isn't it, testing wardrobes. Anyway, so finally, I think if we're thinking about making providers' lives easier, and what practical tools, and this is going to both of you, what practical tools or resources would make the biggest difference? Do you think it's digital solutions, or do you think it's clearer guidance, which we've just mentioned, or something else totally entirely?
I think it's probably both of those things together. As I've already said, there's a lot of providers now using digital tools, whether that's, you know, electronic care planning, whether it's care providers who work with Citation using Atlas platform that allows things to be recorded in real time. But I think you're absolutely right, the single framework's been released, and for providers to understand what good looks like in the eyes of the regulator, I think is going to be essential to tie both of those things together and stop otherwise the uncertainty driving the need for excessive checklists and forms that aren't really helping achieve outcomes where it matters.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a place for digitalization. We can't ignore it. And it is saving people time where it's being done efficiently. So, you know, it's that dynamic view around it. When things change, it has to change. Care plans then have to change. So it's not just environment. It's all of it, really. But I think definitions have to be stuck to. I think if there was commonality of understanding amongst us all, not just the regulator and the provider, but we've got councils, we've got family members, we are answerable to so many different people, and people have different interpretations of it. So we must have that common kind of understanding of what good looks like.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what we do is we create a tool that is going to need different size heads to get it fixed.
Yeah. And that becomes even more difficult where we've got large providers with a number of services, not just across the country, but across different local authorities. Yeah. And that really becomes really difficult to manage that at a local level and achieve something positive without driving excessive.
Health and safety in care is never static. It evolves with new risks, new regulations, and new expectations. What's clear from today's conversation is that while compliance is essential, the real aim is creating environments where staff can deliver safe, compassionate care without being held back by unnecessary burdens. A huge thank you to my guests, Martin Andrews for sharing his frontline expertise and Nadra Ahmed for bringing that vital national perspective. And to our listeners, we hope you've found this discussion useful. At Citation, we're committed to supporting providers not just to stay compliant, but to thrive as care environments continue to change. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.